What does it take to be acclaimed and given a thunderous ovation at this world's foremost peacekeeping organization? What do you say? How do you act? What do you stand for that rewards you with thunderous ovation and approval from delegates of the General Assembly of the United Nations? It's obviously not easy to become a hero. It takes hard work. Lots of it. Maybe we can learn from Yasser Arafat. Enter Yasser Arafat, Profile of a Hero. With negotiations having broken down between Israelis and Egyptians following Mr. Kissinger's latest quest for peace in the Middle East, we all know that the Middle East remains the tinder keg for the entirety of the world. One debacle after another in the world recently, the virtual total collapse of South Vietnam, the almost imminent collapse of Cambodia, and the swallowing up of other nations in Southeastern Asia by the communists, and now no real peace in sight in the Middle East. And continually keeping all of those hopes dead in the Middle East are the Palestinian guerrilla organizations headed basically by Yasser Arafat. Yasser Arafat, Profile of a Hero. Mr. Arafat is a moderate, they say, of the Palestinian organizations. He is a self-confessed murderer, a guerrilla, a terrorist, chairman of the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, and newly appointed spokesman for the Palestinian cause. And he's been given an honor recently that was really hard to believe. It's a wonder to me he wasn't given the Nobel Peace Prize, because to see such a man be given such a thunderous ovation at the world's largest peacekeeping body was one of the most incredible sights I think you or I have witnessed in this topsy-turvy world of recent date. The UN invitation which had brought him to participate in the debate on the Middle East crisis was unprecedented. Prior to this time, the only leader of a non-member state ever to speak to the General Assembly was the Roman Catholic Pontiff, but no man without a statesman's title, much less without a country, had ever before been asked to address that 29-year-old body. Moreover, the invitation had been issued by an overwhelming UN vote of 105 to 4, with 30 abstentions. Only the United States, Bolivia, the Dominican Republic, and Israel itself had voted against it. Israel was seething with anger at the United Nations decision to invite the PLO to debate the Palestine question. Former Israeli Foreign Minister Abba Eban bitterly denounced the action, and I quote, "Only 2 years ago, I was sitting in that building with other delegates to the United Nations. And do you know what we were discussing? We were discussing how to stop terrorism, how to suppress it, how to punish it, how to see that people, men and women and children, would not be pushed around," end of quote. Meanwhile, at the United Nations, PLO spokesman Shafiq al-Hut triumphantly said, and I quote, "We are here because the character of the United Nations has changed substantially with the expansion of freedom in the third world and the growing awareness on the part of mankind of the serious threat of the Zionist state constitutes to the humanist values and to world peace." In Beirut, Lebanon, Dr. Nabil al-Shat, a close associate of Yasser Arafat, pointed out the significance of the PLO's unprecedented invitation to the UN, and I quote, "The resolution isolates Israel and the United States of America in the international community, and I'm sure it will put pressure, even on the American people, to try to adjust an extremely, historically wrong decision by their government to support the state of Israel, and therefore to negate the very existence and very rights of the Palestinian people," end of quote. Back in the United States, tempers flared as the Jewish Anti-Defamation League sought to prevent members of the Palestinian Liberation Organization from entering the country. This legal action was turned down by a federal judge in New York City. Due to massive demonstrations and the imminent threat of violence, the headquarters of the United Nations in New York was like an armed camp for the unparalleled visit of Palestinian Liberation Organization leader Yasser Arafat. 1,000 police were involved in what was the tightest security restrictions ever enforced. Hundreds manned street approaches. Others patrolled the East River beside the United Nations complex in boats. Some flew overhead in helicopters. Yasser Arafat, who arrived in New York on an unscheduled flight from Algiers before dawn, was taken in an army helicopter to the United Nations building. Inside, Arafat received a standing ovation from the General Assembly and was treated by protocol as a head of state.
I thank you for having invited the Palestine Liberation Organization to participate in the United Nations General Assembly. I am grateful to all those who contributed to the decision to introduce the question of Palestine.
While he was speaking, hundreds of Jews and Palestinians took part in pro- and anti-PLO demonstrations outside. Jewish demonstrators chanted pro-Israel songs and slogans and carried placards reading, 6 million, never again. War on Hitler, war on Arafat, same fight, same struggle. In his 80-minute address, punctuated by repeated applause, Arafat called for the establishment of a single Palestinian state incorporating Arabs, Jews, and Christians.
Today, I have come bearing an olive branch and a freedom fighter's gun. Do not let the olive branch fall from my hand. Do not let the olive branch fall from my hand.
Despite the protests of Israel and America, Yasser Arafat had climbed to the top of the mountain. He has defied all the established rules of international acceptability to become a champion.
Mr. President, war flares up in Palestine, and yet, Mr. President, it is Palestine that peace will be born.
Yes, in the obvious shortage of modern-day heroes, Yasser Arafat, with his brand of liberation, has stepped forward to fill that void. Plain truth. Plain truth. Plain truth. The international publication of understanding. Information you need in today's changing society. Reports on meetings with national leaders. Correspondents in all quarters of the globe report on current trends. Plain truth. The journal you should read. Garner Ted Armstrong's analysis of important national and global issues. Read Plain Truth every 2 weeks at no cost to you. For your free subscription, call 800-423-4444. 800-423-4444. Toll free. That's 800-423-4444. Plain Truth.
Plain Truth will be headed your way as soon as we receive your telephone call at the toll-free number 800-423-4444. I'd like to show you the current number following the one you just saw the picture of with some of these articles. Take you just a moment to take a look at it inside. Latin America's aggressive new nationalism, the Panama Canal issue flares anew, and of course an article about the assassination of King Faisal of Saudi Arabia. World Bureau reports, we have Art Buchwald's column, many exciting issues upcoming every single 2 weeks, coming out twice as often with twice the impact and about twice the number of words that we used to have in the slick magazine, Plain Truth. And this is absolutely free of charge, almost 3 million circulation now around the world, read by people in all inhabited parts of this earth, even in the islands of the South Pacific. The Plain Truth is printed on three continents simultaneously. You can have your free copy on its way to you if you'll dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Operators are waiting to take your call right now. If you live in the state of California, by the way, there's a different number you have to use. That's area 213, and the number is 577-5225. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. There's one thing that is absolutely for sure. There are many, many sides, not just two sides, to the Palestinian and the Jewish arguments over homeland. If you want to go all the way back into the history of the ancient land back there as it was inhabited originally by those tribes that were pushed out by the Israelis or the Jews, if you want to say it that way, actually it was made up of many people other than just the Jews, including the House of Israel and all the other tribes who came out of Egypt from their original captivity to inhabit the land of Palestine during the time that is recorded in the Bible in the book of Exodus. But if you want to go back to the days of the Turks, the Ottoman Empire, the British Mandate, Transjordan and its creation in the years following World War I, I believe about 1922. If you want to come forward to the Jewish state of 1948, there's many, many wars that have occurred since and the terrorist acts. And you look at the entire picture in perspective, it is still very difficult to know who has the prior claim and who is right. But the one point I want to bear down on, no matter who is right, I believe with all of my being that terrorism and murder and the blasting, the shooting, the stabbing, the strangulation of innocent bystanders, of passersby, of women and children, of unarmed civilians is not the way to achieve any kind of justifiable means. It is just not the way to achieve world peace. This to me is an unprecedented event to see a person, a self-confessed murderer and the head of an incredibly complex maze of splinter groups of Arab dissident organizations and terrorist groups. And even though he is viewed as somewhat of a moderate, Arafat, believe it or not, is viewed as a moderate and has been threatened with death by those inside other splinter organizations of some of the Arab guerrilla organizations inside other countries. Yet, nevertheless, this man, without a statesman's title, without a country to represent, had become so important in the eyes of the majority, that excludes the United States, some of our Western European allies, Japan, other major countries, but the majority of United Nations delegates, that he was given recognition unlike that of any other figure in the history of that august body. Now, what do you believe in? How do you act? What do you advocate that rewards you with a thunderous ovation and approval from the General Assembly of the United Nations? Surely it's not easy to become a champion of this stature. What is there that those people know about Yasser Arafat that you and the general public do not know? Maybe we can get some pointers from Yasser Arafat himself. First, become a guerrilla. It doesn't matter that there may be other guerrilla organizations. All it takes is a willingness to terrorize men, women, and children to promote your objectives. Then expand your operations so that you eventually terrorize and blackmail entire nations into yielding to your demands. A war, of course, won't hurt the cause either. Remember the Six-Day War, which inflicted a savage wound on Arab pride, played right into the hands of Yasser Arafat as well as other guerrillas? This and the failure to resolve the refugee situation generated an ample supply of volunteers, including even young boys, wanting to be trained in guerrilla tactics. Of course, Yasser Arafat has not been responsible for every act of violence in the Middle East because, until recently at least, the PLO was only one of many active guerrilla units. Collectively, these commando groups have left a long and bloody trail of ambushes and massacres that stretch from Munich, Germany, to Tel Aviv, Israel. After the Six-Day War, the commando's first assault was in Athens. A Fedayeen group attacked an Israeli El Al airliner at the airport, killing and wounding Israeli civilians. By 1970, their savagery had escalated. Their target this time was an Israeli school bus, which they blew up with bazooka rockets. 8 children were killed and 22 were wounded. Later, Arab commandos pulled off their most spectacular coup to date. They skyjacked 4 American, British, and Swiss airliners with more than 400 passengers on board and took them to Egypt and Jordan. Then they freed the passengers and blew up the aircraft. Planes and airports became prime targets for terror. In May 1972, the Arabs enlisted others in their cause and sent a group of Japanese revolutionaries on a would-be suicide mission to Lod Airport in Tel Aviv. There in the passenger hall, they opened up with machine guns and grenades, killing 27 people and wounding 70. But by far, the most stunning Arab attack came at the height of the Olympic Games in Munich, where Black September guerrillas infiltrated the Israeli team living quarters. An aghast world focused its undivided attention on the Munich airport, where German police fought a gun battle with Arab guerrillas, and in that nightmare, 17 people died. Raids inside Israel became more commonplace after 1973's October War. At a small Israeli border town near Lebanon, three guerrillas occupied an apartment building. 18 Israelis died in the resultant shootout. Guerrilla warfare hit the heart of Israel's capital, Tel Aviv, at least its economic and communications capital, at night with a grenade attack on a crowded cinema. 54 people were injured in the attack and 3 killed. But the bloodiest episode of all occurred in northern Israel. In Maalot, Arabs held 85 Israeli school children hostage. When the troops stormed the building, 26 children, most of them young girls, were killed in the resultant attack. It's quite a ghastly record overall. Ironically, for men like Yasser Arafat, these guerrilla tactics of violence and terror have catapulted a small, obscure group of terrorists to world fame and prestige. A second way of becoming a hero, Arafat style, is to manipulate affairs so you can become the head of all guerrillas in your part of the world. This may not be an easy job, especially when there are several independent and competing guerrilla organizations, but it can be done. Infighting among the guerrillas has flared repeatedly during the last decade, but in 1970, Yasser Arafat became leader of all guerrilla organizations as well as commander-in-chief of the PLO. And so far, somehow, he's been able to stay on top. Third, get yourself selected to be the sole representative of an oppressed group of people such as refugees. To do this, arrange PR visits with top world officials, as Arafat did. He arranged an historic 1 3/4 hour meeting with the French foreign minister. It was the first such meeting between Arafat and a Western foreign minister. The results were impressive. France promised to support the PLO if the guerrillas would moderate their demands. Next, Arafat and his colleagues traveled to Moscow for a series of discussions with Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin. The main purpose of these talks was to clarify the USSR's position in the Middle East following the PLO's recent diplomatic successes. Kosygin said he welcomed the growing recognition won by the PLO. Arafat also arranged a summit conference with Arab leaders in order to declare himself the official representative of the Palestinian cause. The 7th official Arab summit conference was in Morocco's capital, Rabat, where 18 heads of state convened. Included were President Idi Amin of Uganda, King Faisal of Saudi Arabia, King Hassan of Morocco, King Hussein of Jordan, and President Anwar Sadat of Egypt. Arafat said that the PLO would not settle for a compromise with Jordan and that the Arab countries had to choose between the commando groups and Jordan. The result was that Arafat emerged victorious as the official representative of the Palestinians. But true to form, Abu Iyad, deputy to Yasser Arafat, told a cheering crowd of students after the conference was over that 2 attempts had been made to murder King Hussein of Jordan during the Rabat summit meeting. Iyad said that 14 members of al-Fatah had tried to kill King Hussein, but they had failed. A second group also met with no success, but Iyad promised that al-Fatah would assassinate King Hussein finally. Fourth, always deny responsibility for anything bad that happens, but be quick to claim credit for actions that will build up your image. If world opinion denounces a particular act of terrorism, you can say, well, it was out of my control, but secretly relish the pressure it will place on the enemy to capitulate. If an attack is especially successful, and there weren't too many women or children killed, you can claim it as your own and threaten future terrorism if your demands aren't met. Fifth, you can launch an extensive propaganda campaign to convince everyone you're for peace, that you don't want violence, regardless of what you and other guerrilla organizations have done.
You have recently had great success. So let's now talk about the future, about the solutions, about what's going to happen.
Have you solutions?
No, you should have them.
Have you solutions? I am offering
yes.
A solution. I am offering a solution to live in my homeland together.
Yeah.
In my homeland.
But the main trouble here is.
Which me, my parents, my grandfather, I lived. Yes. For many years, at least thousands of years. We are not going to kick anybody in the sea as they have tried to photo or to picture us that we want to kick. We are the victims.
I have born in Jerusalem, but sorry, they had plastered my house. The house which in which I have born. Why? Golda Meir, who had born in Russia, have the right to live here, in this area, in Jerusalem, more than me? You accept it? As a human being. As a human being, you accept it? I'm asking you for the world. And in spite of this, I am saying that let us live together. Equality, peace, and justice.
But could we achieve that in the first instance without liquidating the state of Israel? Not in the interest of Israel, but in the interest of a solution.
I am not saying something like that. They are saying so. I am saying, first, we want to establish our independent authority in any place, and we have the right to do it.
No one really questions whether or not the Palestinians deserve the right to live, and they deserve the right to live in freedom and in peace with neighbors. But when you look deeply into the situation in neighboring Arab states around Israel, you find the Palestinians are not welcome there, in spite of the fact that Egypt, Libya, Morocco, just to name a few, along with Iraq and Syria, give a great deal of lip service to the Palestinian cause, but those governments will not officially grant the Palestinian Arabs places of abode, jobs, and a livelihood inside those countries. Believe it or not, when you look at the number of millions that there are, 3 million approximately, scattered throughout that area, even as far over in the east and on the Persian Gulf as Kuwait, you will find many of the Palestinians are up-and-coming citizens in such countries as Lebanon and Egypt, that they tend to be far more of an intelligentsia. When you look at Jordan, for example, about 90% of the Palestinian, I should say it this way, about 90% of the graduates of universities in the nation of Jordan are Palestinian, where they only represent something about from 30 to 50%, I forget exactly, but there are approximately 1 million living inside Jordan. Some have said that if there could be the divided state of a Gaza Strip, where the largest number of Palestinian refugees live presently, and the West Bank, that is the other side of the Jordan River, on what used to be Transjordan soil, but which was won by the Israelis following the 67 war, that perhaps the Palestinians would at least accept this as an interim agreement, giving them status at least as a country, giving them, even though truncated, a homeland, a place to which all refugees could then come. Even though some have tried to view Yasser Arafat as a moderate, and have said he may be willing to settle for a truncated state, and therefore some kind of a piecemeal or interim solution which would at least establish a Palestinian homeland in the area, you have to look at what he himself has said. In an interview published in The New Republic, Arafat said, and I quote, "We will continue to wage war against Israel by ourselves until we get Palestine back. The goal of our struggle is the end of Israel, and there can be no compromises or mediations. We don't want peace. We want victory." That statement, by the way, was made a little bit before the triumphal entry at the United Nations, where he advocated the creation of a Palestinian nation in which Arabs, Jews, and Christians could presumably live together in what he called justice, harmony, and fraternity. It looks like Mr. Arafat is talking out of both sides of his mouth at the same time. On the one hand, in an interview safely ensconced in some of the Arab countries or in visits with other leading Arab officials in Egypt, or in Lebanon, or in Syria, Arafat makes inflammatory statements about doing away entirely with the Jewish state, statements which indicate strongly his belief that the Arabs will never have any kind of a settlement short of the absolution of Israel, the absolvement of the country, the extermination of them, an almost Hitler-like pogrom which he envisions, meaning the absolute ceasing to exist of the Jewish homeland. On the other hand, in talking to reporters in the West, or in visiting the United Nations, he talks about an olive branch. At the Palestinian Liberation Organization's 10th anniversary in Beirut, Arafat made these statements, and I quote, "The last 10 years were characterized by both victories and setbacks. But the revolution, despite the mad efforts of its enemies, international imperialists, Zionists, and invaders, has accomplished miracles. 1975 will be a year for escalation and revolutionary cohesion, a year, according to Arafat, of intensified struggle." You cannot have a man on the one hand saying, "The goal of our struggle is the end of Israel," and everybody listening to him believing that, and the organization he represents deliberately taking credit, if that's the word, for bloody attacks upon helpless civilians like the grenade-throwing incident against the wedding party in Tel Aviv of recent infamy, and at the same time believe he means what he says about simple, peaceful solutions living in brotherhood and harmony with one's relatives and one's neighbors. It just doesn't seem to make sense. Well, time will tell. We hope now that the Geneva conference will be started again, the peace negotiations, and it looks like at least that the PLO will attempt to sit down. If they do, the Israelis say they will simply not go to Geneva. If the PLO goes, other splinter organizations inside the various guerrilla organizations of the Arabs say they will attempt to assassinate Yasser Arafat. If I were Yasser Arafat, I would certainly want to watch my back, because there are so many splinter organizations with their own self-proclaimed heroes and champions who would like to someday walk the same paths that Yasser Arafat, our hero for this story, has trod, that I imagine their goal would be as much the assassination of Yasser Arafat as any other immediate achievement that they could envision. So if I were Yasser Arafat, I would watch my back very much, especially if I went to Geneva. You know, when you look in retrospect at this incredible era in which we live, the Middle East is an absolute powder keg of turbulent turmoil where World War III could get underway. And then you listen to the speeches of some of these men. You listen to what they have said. You read their quotations in print. You begin to get a feeling of absolute hopelessness about any solution anytime in the Middle East. You need to get the overview, and the way to do it is to write for The Plain Truth and find that there is a solution beyond human understanding. And we talk in The Plain Truth plainly even about Bible prophecy and about an ultimate solution beyond the acknowledgement of today's news media, because they simply do not acknowledge God or Bible prophecy. The only real solution in this world is world government taken out of the hands of man. Not in the hands of greedy, grasping, self-seeking, tribal and group instinct man with his racism, his bigotry, and his prejudice, but taken out of the hands of man once and for all. This is what we believe, and that's what you will read in The Plain Truth. It is plain truth, straight from the shoulder, plain talk. I hope you'll write for it. We'll send it to you by return mail as soon as you dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
All literature offered on the Garner Ted Armstrong program is free upon request. Write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. In the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, call 213-577-5225. Be sure to watch Garner Ted Armstrong again next week at this same time.